did not go into details, but hoped for the best in for the region, and praised our youth for and also expressed some understanding, which is very important to their cause and their hopes and their aspirations. And you know, it's very important to show some understanding for all these matters, and to share with our people these very intense moments.
Well, in fact, Pope Benedict didn't actually name Egypt, but I think it was in everybody's minds when he was talking about North Africa and the Middle East, and when he said young people have launched their vast movement calling for reforms and a more active share in political and social life. But were you surprised that he didn't mention Egypt by name?
I was not surprised at all, because this is a wave that is taking the whole north of Africa and maybe the whole Middle East, also in other parts of the Middle East. So it's not only in Egypt. Of course, Egypt is a leading country in the region, but I did not expect him to address Egypt in particular. I think he did very well by mentioning the whole phenomenon as a general phenomenon in our part of the region, which is true also, that it is some events that we are all in the Middle East sharing, with some differences here and there, but all calling for the same things: freedom, reform, social justice, and better economic conditions.
Now, the Pope spoke of what he called religiously motivated terrorism, especially in Asia and Africa. And in Egypt over the past year, we've seen repeated attacks on some Christian communities, particularly the Copt community in Muslim-majority areas. But to what extent do you see these incidents as a product of religious terrorism? Or are they more of an indication of the deep mistrust between some Muslims and Christians?
I don't see it in that way at all. I see it in another context, completely different and completely more of a political one, of a political nature. I mean, the events, if you remember, the terrible events that took place at the beginning of last year, and the bombing of the church in Alexandria, which killed 23 people, now we are discovering that it was a plot by the agents of the ancient regime in order to create fear between the two segments of the population, the Christians and Muslims, which constitute really one people. And we don't feel these differences between us. Mistrust has been planted by the old regime. We hope that with more freedom, with more a possibility of expressing ourselves peacefully, these things will come to an end. I don't think that last year has seen much of these events, violence against Christians in Egypt, motivated by hatred between Muslims and Christians at all. It was just, you know, the remnants, and in this particularly in this period of transition, the remnants of an old heritage, very heavy one, that we are bound to carry until we cross and this very difficult time and period of transition, and go to a democratic, hopefully democratic era.
Pope Benedict spoke about an education system that fosters respect for religious freedom. Do you see that as something that would help the Egyptian people, that would lead to greater trust and understanding between Muslims and Christians?
I would always advocate, as I mentioned before, that trust already exists between Muslims and Christians. In the problem is the intrusion of political actors who really ignite for their own interest these feelings of mistrust, and, you know, inject misconceptions and stuff like that. But of course, education is instrumental in the life of any people. Of course, I think we will see more of an open educational system, but this always will depend on how much freedom we have in our system, because it is with freedom in general, with respect of all human rights, that religious freedom is brought about.
We've spoken about acts of violence against Christians in some parts of the country, but there are real fears about what the new Egypt will look like among Christians with the rise of a more conservative Islam. So many Christians are considering leaving the country. What would the loss of a Christian community mean for Egypt?
I don't think we can imagine an Egypt without Christians. They are Egyptians. They are part of this population, but not even an integral part, more than that. And I don't think we can at all imagine our Egypt without 10 million Egyptians, or maybe I'm not saying the exact number of Christians in here, but it's inconceivable of imagining in Egypt without its Christians. It's Egypt is Christians and Muslims, has always been like that, and it remain like this. Now, I understand the fears and concerns of the Christian community, of course, when you have a conservative power in power, of course, concerns are there, and fears are there that some things might change in their in the way they are treated, the Christians are treated in the country. But I really don't believe so. I really think that all, again, will depend on our will to establish a democratic system, because it is with democracy that people get over their differences, that minority rights are respected. And especially in our case, as I mentioned before, all these cases were instigated by the regime in order just to create this division between people. I don't think that in a free country where you have, you know, people's rights respected, you would have such a fear. With the rise of the Islamic parties, majority in the parliament, of course, one can imagine that some changes will happen in the life, in the mode of life in Egypt, concerning either Christians or Muslims. It doesn't really, maybe, of course, Christians are concerned more. But I don't think the majority in the parliament will commit any acts or enact any laws that would affect the rights of Christians in Egypt. This would be a very, very unwise step to take. I think the revolution has been there in order to get over inequalities and end inequalities between the people. So I don't think they will have any way any way of doing that. Even if they want, I don't think Egyptians will allow them to do so.